Shane, this week is Parshas Vayeshev. Yaakov dwells in the land Megure Oviv, the land of his father's sojourn, Beretz Canaan. And you know, the word Megure also means fear. Lesoguru mipnei ish. So Yaakov tries to dwell in that place where his father dwells, where Yitzchak dwells. And you may know that Yitzchak, in his life, really, he never put himself into a place of doubt. And the whole idea of Gevura as a way of serving God is to avoid, refrain from doing anything that requires birurin, that requires qualification or clarification after the act. That to not do anything that has gray area. And we know the meaning of Yaakov Avinu, the meaning of his life, the meaning of Tiferes, is that he would shine light on everything that he was about to do. That Yaakov Avinu never did anything in his life without thinking about it first. And so he can say, at the end of his life, he can say to Reuven, "You are Reshis Oini, you are the first of my strength," because the first time that Yaakov Avinu had an orgasm in his life was the night that Reuven was conceived, because he never did anything in his life that wasn't done with forethought. But even if you do something with forethought and you prepare yourself to do an act, it's still possible that the act you're about to do, the outcome isn't clear, and even your own kavana isn't 100% clear, because of course I'm a human being. So maybe there's some negia atzmis, maybe there's some bias to the self, maybe there's some ego involved in the act. Even if it's an act of worship of God, you know, still it's hard to avoid having the self interject itself, push itself forward and have its agenda and its needs met or whatever. So the Rashi begins in quoting from the Medrash and the Gemara, "Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva." Yaakov wants to dwell in peace, in serenity. "Kofts olav rugzo shel Yosef." So the troubles with Yosef jump on him. So all the commentators ask, what's the meaning? Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva, because Yaakov wants a little bit of peace and quiet. So kofts olav rugzo shel Yosef, and the Medrash goes further and says, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "Lo yidayon." Is it not enough that tzaddikim are going to have shalva, going to have serenity in the world to come? They want serenity in this world as well. Nah, let's show him. That to take that medrash at its face value, it's like, what God is mean, you know? Ken Shpashtein, he can't stand it if people are having a good time, you know. So there, everybody looks at this medrash and says, what does it mean? Does it mean, why does Yaakov want his shalva? Why does Yaakov want his serenity and peace of mind? Because he wants to enjoy this world? That not. To a certain extent, you got to have serenity, otherwise you can't worship God either. So, that's the meaning. Ledayon, is it not enough that you have serenity for your worship of God, which is how you acquire your place in the world to come, but you also want to extend this peace of mind to your life in this world? That already puts the whole thing in a bad light. So God tests Yaakov to find out whether the serenity Yaakov wants is because he wants it, he needs it to worship God with, or is it some kind of because it's just something that he needs. It feels like having peace of mind. So, Rugzu Shel Yosef, if we're talking about the whole story of Yosef, what is going on, what's the problem with Yosef and his brothers, and why there's so much antagonism? See, because we look back, we have the benefit of the whole narrative, and we can see a big picture they couldn't see, right? They only knew from experience that the process of refining the soul, the Jewish soul, there's a sloughing off of the dross, right? So Avraham has two children, but Yishmael has to go. Not just Yishmael, but all the children of Keturah he sends away. And Yitzchak is the one who carries the gene, the germ of the Jewish people. And then he also has to go through this process. He has two children, Yaakov and Esav. And there has to be this great distance that's put between Yaakov and Esav. So now, the children of Yaakov, who look at their family history, and that's all they see, they don't know whether that process doesn't still have to happen. So Yosef thinks that he's the Bechir, that he's really the chosen one, and that his brothers really are not, that they're part of that process of sloughing off. And they, on the other hand, think the other way around. They think that they are the chosen, and that if there's any dross in Yaakov, that really Yosef represents it, and he has to be sloughed off, cut off. So Shimon says, let's kill him. Reuven says, Nashlicheu leboir, let's throw him in a pit, let's not kill him. Yehuda says, Lechundim kirenu leishmelim, let's sell him. So, the Torah tells us, Vayachloim Yosef chaloim, he dreamt a dream, Vayagid leechov, and he told his brothers, Vayisnu'u oisu, and they hated him. And then he told him the dream. V'hinu ma'almim alumim. V'nachin basoda, we're in the field and we're gathering the sheaves, and your sheaves bow down to my sheaf. Komo alimus alumosi. My sheaf stands up. You know, the metaphor for the standing sheaf, that's a really sexual metaphor. And the, you know, bread itself, Mate Lechem, is called a staff of bread. You know, this whole Yosef is the Midas Yisod. You know, we think Midas Yisod is connected to sexuality and how we connect to other people and how we are Mashpia, and you know, we forget that really, on a deeper level, the meaning of this Sefira of Yisod and living your life in Midas Yisod means that you shine light. The light comes from Tiferes. The light is the sunlight, right? You shine light on every other Midah. That's really what Midas Yisod does. That somebody who is born Midas Yisod, somebody who has clarity and who operates and he has this divine aspect in his life, he can pour light, he can shine light on every act. That's the real meaning of Midas Yisod. That the sunlight which comes from Yaakov, which is Tiferes, shines through Yosef. And all the Midos, L'cho Hashem Agdulo, Hagvura Tiferes Vanitzava Hahoid, Ki Koil, Bashamay Mevoretz. The Ochid Bashamay Mevoretz, the Targum says the word phrase Ki Koil Bashamay is because everything means because it unifies heaven and earth. So the middle of Yisod, we got L'cho Hashem Agdulah Gvurah Tiferes V'Netzav Hahoid. You've got the six midois, right? And then the seventh is called Kikoil. Because everything has to pass through Midas Yisod. And if you are Bora Midas Yisod, then it means that you, as the midois pass through you, whether it's a meanness or a withholding, or whether it's a giving or a loving or a judging or a supporting or whatever it is, that if you have the power Midas Yisod, you can shine the spotlight, the projector. You can look at every act under a microscope. That's the brilliance, the ha'ora. That's the enlightenment that comes from Midas Yisod in respect of all the other midos. And that was the midah of Yosef. That Yosef, when Yosef was around, he could shine a light onto everything everybody was doing. And the thing is, you know, that so many of the things that we do don't really look so well in the light. And that was very hard. Because Yosef, he comes from that place of yira, of fear. For him, there's no gray areas either. You know, everything has to be looked at in this cruel light. It's a light that doesn't have any, it doesn't allow any shadows. It's like a naked, powerful light that just illuminates everything. No, if we look at our lives in that kind of light, it's gefährlich. Who can stand up in such a light? So when Yosef looks at his brothers, he sees things which is nicht so, and he comes and tells their father Aleph that they're eating Evah min hachai, that they're eating flesh of living animals, meaning that they do things without messinus, they do things without care and attention, and without taking time to do things properly. Because the Indian of Evah min hachai, Zishbitzer says, you know, it's boholo, you know, it's doing things without, I mean, you take an animal, you don't even wait for it to die, and you're already grabbing bits of it. And the second thing he accused them was that they have too much interaction with the Canaanite women. So the brothers felt that Yosef, in looking at them with the light of Midas Yisod, makes them look so bad. This naked light is too strong. And the fact that he's bringing Vayove Yosef dibosom ro el aviyem, the fact that he tells their father, that he tells them, if Yosef comes and he tells me, look, what you're doing is not right, look, I'm showing you clearly, that's one thing. But if he goes Tzimtaten Yaakov, and then he's making a Pirud Levovois, he's splitting, it's a classic destructive pattern in relationships. When one of the person is really ill, then they try to split the others from each other. So the fact that Yosef brings Dibosom Ro'el Aviyem means to them that there's something really toxic, wrong, bad in Yosef. And so they want to get rid of him. Yosef, what's his kavona? See, Yosef doesn't realize that he is Medici's son. You know, we operate in this model where all of us, we have these pictures of these round circles that represent Sefirot, and there are these pathways and horizontal ones and vertical ones and diagonal ones connecting, and this is not how Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov were thinking, and it's not how the Kinderlech were thinking. When Avraham was the only one, then he was the only one. He was all that there was, you know. There wasn't this image of ten sephiros like we have today. And then when Yitzchak was the only one, then he was the only one. And each one in his time was the recipient. Each one in his time was the conduit. Each one in his time was the paradigm of the divine presence and so on. Yosef, in his time, he feels that he is receiving from Yaakov, because Yaakov is giving him everything that he received from Shem Ve'eva. So Yosef thinks that the word is Malchus. He's the recipient. What Yosef doesn't realize is that no, that he's Yisod, he's the conduit through which everything is flowing to Malchus. And this, they don't even have words. I mean, we can, you know, describe this narrative in those terms because we have thousands of years of texts that elaborate it and simplify it and shape it for us. But they were groping in the dark, right? They just had their image of what they're supposed to do and who they are and how they relate to their father and what they're supposed to do as Yidden. And, you know, the only Torah that they had really was their father told them the dream that he had. V'hinei sulam mutzav arzo, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is nitzav olav. And he says to him, I'm the God of your father, and Shmaticha, I'm going to guard you wherever you go, and I'm going to bring you back to this place. This was the whole Torah that they had. Until they came out of Mitzrayim and they stood at Sinai, really, this was the revelation that the Bnei Yisrael had, that their father Yaakov told them that he had received the Torah from God. So we used to learn this, you know, and all through hundreds of years of darkness, of hoping and longing for a better life, you know, if we sat together by Shalosh Hiddus and somebody said to somebody else, Nu, say Dvar Torah, so we would go back to this dream, this vision of the ladder, Malochim going up and down, Shem Nitzov Olav, God standing on top of the ladder and promising, going to bring you back to this place, I'm going to guard you. And every word that, you know, we had new pshotim and new pshetlach. Yosef tells his brothers, I had a dream. So immediately they felt very threatened. Even before he tells them what the dream is, Vayachlein vayisapelecho vayisnu oisoi, they already hate him. Just as soon as he says to them, hey, Chevra, you know, I had a dream last night, right? And they think to themselves, oh, so that's where this is going now, right? So our father has this dream, and now it's Yosef who has the dream. So this is how the mantle is going to get passed on. He gets a dream, so now who are we? And then he tells them what the dream actually is. Komo alimosi, my thing stands up, vigamnito, and you all bow down to me. And Pshischa, they asked, why did it say Yisrael ohav es Yosef mikol echav? It says Ve'yeshiv Yaakov beve'esheva. Yaakov lives in Ve'esheva. Ela told us Yaakov Yosef shvayis reshona. These are the generations of chronicles that Yaakov has a child, Yosef, who's 17. And then it says, V'Yisroel ohev es Yosef. Yisroel loves Yosef. Ki ben zekunim ulu. So, why is he called Yisroel? So, Pshisra, they said this is a loshoin bitmir. V'Yisroel ohev es Yosef. Mikol echav. You see, when Yaakov is Yaakov, and we know that Yaakov is Katnus. Yaakov represents, when he's called Yaakov, this is the man in Katnus, in smallness. Ki kotonu. Yaakov is known as the small. So when Yaakov is in Yaakov, then Yosef is really the great recipient. He's the conduit through which Yaakov flows. But when Yaakov is in Gadlus, is in Yisroel, then it's not. Then it's not Yosef. Then Yehuda is the end. Yehuda gova ba'ochev, ba'echov. Va'ata Yehuda. The Zohar Kodesh says, what does it mean, va'ata Yehuda, and you Yehuda? You are the first father and the second father. You are the big one. So, V'Yisroel ohev es Yosef is a question. V'Yisroel ohev es Yosef. Yaakov, we can understand. He makes a big thing out of Yosef, but Yisroel, he should know better. See, the thing is, Yaakov and Yosef, they go into gulus. They go into exile. First, into exile is Yaakov when he runs away and he goes to Choron. 2 weeks ago, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'sheva, Vayele Chorono. So his mamash, like, he has to run away and go into gulus. And in doing so, he empowers Yosef, who goes into gulus into Mitzrayim. It's an even deeper gulus. But then, Yaakov isn't just Yaakov. Yaakov is Yisroel. And when Yaakov is Yisroel, then there's another dynamic which even Yaakov himself really wasn't clear on. And in this, there's this flowering of the 12 tribes. As we were learning in Sefer Yetzirah, you know, that there's the Shnemesri Gvule Alachson, there's the 12 lines of the diagonal, that if you take a spot in space, we say that it has, every spot in space has 6 sides, east, west, north and south, and up and down. And so there's a cube, and that each cube, if you imagine a middle point, that there are 12 diagonal lines that could go out through the 12 lines formed by the cube. And that would make a dodecahedron, which is like the proto-globe, and so on outwards, expanding forever. So Yaakov, when he's Yaakov, then he just passes everything on to Yosef. But when Yaakov becomes Yisroel, then he flowers into these 12 aspects, which, had it been able to happen, there wouldn't have been this struggle between Yosef and his brothers. And what happens? Everything falls apart. Why does it fall apart? And we know, because again, we're looking at the narrative with so much distance, like a telescope, we can see, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Avram, Yodoya Teda, you should know that your children are going to be strangers in a strange land, and they're going to enslave them for 400 years. This Haftocha, this promise that God has made to Avram, has to come true, willy-nilly. And the Medrash says, you know, Rabbeinu Shalom, we know that when you wanted us to love each other, we loved each other. And when you wanted us to hate each other, then we hated each other. I mean, let's not pretend that this was, you know, just us acting out, you know, our complexes here in the family. That Rabbeinu Shalom, you know, whatever happened there with Yehuda and his brothers, you were the chief agent. And when it was time for us to be blinded by hatred, we were blinded by hatred. And oh, why? So, and then the Midrash gives a moshel of somebody who's trying to get a cow to move. And the cow's like, you know, got its 4 feet in the ground, is not going to be moved, and refuses. So what does the farmer do? He takes a calf, and he starts to torture the calf. And this calf is bleating, or whatever, however you describe the sound of a calf. Nu, and the cow, he hears her calf bleating, so the cow goes running because it can't really avoid it. And the Midrash says, you know, it's a really crude description of what's happening. How are we going to get Yaakov to go to Mitzrayim? There's only one way. We have to get Yosef to go to Mitzrayim. And Yosef will start bleeding, and Yaakov will come. Don't worry about it. If you can get Yosef to Mitzrayim, everything is taken care of. Oh, so how do we get Yosef to Mitzrayim? Oh, let's get his brothers to try and kill him. Kill him, or sure, let's go and sell him. So the Chachomim of the Midrash could see, you know, in really simplistic terms, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, when you wanted us to love him, we loved him. Now you want us to hate him, we'll hate him. So why is all this happening? So Ribbono Shel Olam can keep his promise to Avraham Avinu that we have to be slaves in Egypt. In the meantime, while all this is happening, the Ribbono Shel Olam is planting the seeds of Mashiach. So there's something about Yosef needs to be Mitzrayim. Yosef needs to be in Gulas. Yosef needs to be in exile. Because if Yosef is there, he shines such a bright light on everything that there are hardly any mysteries. And Yosef, in fact, needs to be out of the picture so that Yehuda can do what Yehuda does now. The Nois Deisha says that Yehuda is king, right? The Gemara says that the three things that Yehuda did, and his brothers said to him, "You're the king," and one of them is, "Let's go and sell him." Mabetza, why? What profit is there in killing him? Let's sell him. And the other one was taking Binyamin down to Egypt and acting as guarantor, and then Vayigash El of Yehuda. You know, the Midrash says, Vayhi ba'esahi, it was that time after they'd sold Yosef, Reb Shmuel ben Nachman Posach, Ki anoichi yodati, there's a posach in Jeremiah, Yanoichi Yodati es Hamachashovois. I know thoughts, says God. It's interesting that there's the word Esya. On Shabbos, davening, it says, Bekech Ivrim, Matrasirim, Semech Noivim, Shem Shoime Eskerim. What's the S there? Could just say, Shem Shoime Gerim, Yosem Vamoni Yoided. What's the Hashem Shoime? It changes the whole rhythm of the psukim. Hashem Eskerim. But if all the esim are the drash of Rabbi Kiva, who was the Dorish esim, and we see Shoimer as being Oviv Shomer Asadova, like we have this week in the Sedra, that Shmira doesn't mean to guard, but Shmira means to keep something inside you and wait for it to happen, then Hashem Shoime Eskerim, we said, that Avram and Sarah, they come to the land of Canaan with all the souls that they, and it says Esa Nefesh, and we said that was the soul of Rabbi Akiva. So Hashem Shoimer Esgerim refers to, here it says, Ki anoichi yodati es hamachashovos. So the Midrash says, what does it mean? God says, I knew. Always when it's talking about Das, the sphere of Das is like this really strong connection, even sexual connection. Like, v'odam yoda es chava ishtoi. So what's the meaning of das? Shvotim hoyo asukim b'mechirosin shel Yosef. The tribes were busy selling Yosef. V'yosef hoyo osuk b'sakoy v'ta'anisoy, and Yosef was busy with his sackcloth and his fasting. Reuven hoyo osuk b'sakoy v'ta'anisoy. Reuven was busy with his sackcloth and his fasting. V'yakev hoyo osuk b'sakoy v'ta'anisoy, and Yaakov was busy doing his sackcloth and tanis. Everybody was on his sackcloth and tanis jag. V'yehuda hoyo osuk likoch lo'ish, and Yehuda was taking himself a wife. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hoyo osuk b'oyre shel Mashiach, and God was busy creating the light of Mashiach. So, in the Koel Simcha from the Rebbe Rabbinim, he says, "Hamedrash hazeh t'mua l'chol reim." What does this medrash mean? Anybody looking at this medrash has to ask himself, "What's going on?" So he says, "V'nira lefarish debo hamedrash lahoris lono inyan nifla." The medrash is coming to teach us a very, very wonderful mystery. The Kol HaShvotim v'Yaakov, all the tribes, Reuven and his brothers, and Yosef and Yaakov, hoyu asukim b'tzoyim b'tzo'okol Hashem. They were busy with fasting and davening and crying. They were doing tshuva, right? They were doing something. HaShvotim, the tribes, b'shvil mechiras Yosef, because Yosef, they'd sold Yosef and they felt so bad. V'gam Yosef al-Mechirosu, Yosef himself was in Egypt, he was sitting in prison. V'gam Yaakov is abel al-Benoi, and Yaakov was also like in Avelis, he was in mourning. V'hoyim ispalilim l'Hashem b'chol libam b'chol nashem, and they were davening. You can imagine how they were davening with all their heart and all their soul. V'Yehuda, he's the osname, he's the exception. He was getting married. If you look with fleischige Augen, if you look with human eyes, in your nom, then whatever it is they were doing was more godly than what he was doing. What's he doing? He's getting married. And they are davening and learning and doing tshuva and sitting with sackcloth and fasting. Afal pikein o mahamedrash, nevertheless, the medrash tells us, de ein shum odam yodea machshoveis hatmunois belev ish, nobody in the world can know the machashova, the thought, or the kavono, the intention that is buried inside somebody else's heart. Vero'o HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God sees Yoise Masa Yehuda. God prefers whatever it is Yehuda is doing to the davening of Yaakov, to the davening of Reuven, to the davening of Yosef, to the davening of all the brothers. Umimenu, and from that machashova, from that thought, that intent that Yehuda has, hoyaboyra oyrisha Mashiach, he was creating the light of Mashiach. And then the Rebbe Rabbunim goes on, umeato, and from now, yitur tzudivre hamedrash al noche, now you can understand the whole medrash, doik v'tishkach, forget it. Forget about it, v'havin. Understand it. That's the Rebbe Rabbinim. So the thing is, the Rebbe Rabbinim says, he's telling us, I'm telling you something really important, that Yehuda's machshava, Yehuda's intent was much more holy, much more powerful, much more something than that of anybody else in the world at that time. And God took it, ki ani yodati es hamachashavos, that Yehuda and his getting married, which is the union of das, that's preferable, and from that God can make Mashiach. I mean, the Rebbe Rabbinim is obviously telling us something really important, but he doesn't really tell us anything. So, in the Oil Torah from the Kotzker, he brings his Rebbe, he brings the Kol Simcha word for word. And he says, Ad kan dvorav akdoshim beremez godomoid. This is what the Rebbe said with beremiza, right? He was hinting. It was a big hint. Kiloinis ba'e klal ma hoye kavonas Yehuda benesias. Because he doesn't really tell us what Yehuda's kavona is. He just tells us that Yehuda's kavona is so great that God can make Mashiach with it. And he says, Venira bi'a dvorim, that when Yehuda saw what had happened, what was the outcome, that because he was the one who gave the advice to sell Yosef, and everybody followed his advice because they said, okay, you're the boss, you're the leader. So now he sees the outcome, nomos liboy bekirboy, his heart just dissolved and melted. And Yehuda went with this tremendous, tremendous bitterness. Adkin is battle mamish mitzios, till Yehuda himself ceased to exist. Shekol kach don bedatoi, because he judged himself so much in his own mind. Vehichlit b'machshavtoi, and he came to the conclusion, ashe bevadoi. That he's ruined anything that he's done in his life that was good, he's ruined with this terrible thing that he's done to their father and to their brother Yosef. And he almost died. Yehuda almost came to a bitter end just as a consequence of the awareness, the adorning awareness of what had happened, because ultimately they suddenly realized that in fact there were 12 for a reason, and that now that they'd killed Yosef or gotten rid of Yosef, that they'd brought really an end to this perfection that Yosef represented among the 12, and that Yaakov Avinu no longer had 12 children. They were no longer whole. They weren't a complete circle, a complete globe, and that the evolution of the world would have to stop, and that maybe everything would have to start all over again. Ad kinis yashiv bedato, the Kotzke says to Yehuda, decided ve'imitz es ruchoi, and he strengthened his spirit ve'goma beliboy, and he decided in his heart lehaschil, he's gonna start over. Lekayim atoyre mechodesh is going to begin to be a yid all over again. Olahochin levovoy me'atu lavid es Hashem lekaven. From now on, he's going to worship God. Kitinik shenoylet, like a child who's newborn. Mipnei shechoshev ki kva ibed es harishonis. He realized that everything that he's done in the past could not be holy, couldn't have been right, because had there been anything good in his worship of God till now, he couldn't have made such a big, terrible sin as killing his brother. So he came back to say, you know, let me start again. I'm going to start again as I'm a child. So he started at the first mitzvah in the Torah, Pru Urvu. Let me go back to basics. And this machshava, this thought, was such a high thought in front of God, Boichin Levovois, that God could make from this thought Mashiach. The light of Mashiach could come from this. And in this Kotz Gevor, which is unusually verbose, because Kotz usually is even tighter and less florid than the Kol Simcha, if that's possible, is the big machloikus between Kotzk and Ishbitz, because Ishbitz understood the Kol Simcha, the Rebbe, the Rebbunim, completely different. And we find in the Me'er Shiloyach, in the first Chelik and the second Chelik, that in fact what the kavona of Yehuda is quite different. Yehuda says, I've ruined everything. Maybe I can have children who can fix things. I can't fix things. And so he gets married. And really, there's a fundamental difference between Kotzk and Ishbitz here. The Kotzk says that Yehuda goes back to basics and says, I've ruined everything in the past. And I have to start again. No, I'm not bringing anything from my past with me. I'm Kotzen Shenoilet. I'm going to imagine today I was born. And my bar mitzvah is today. What am I going to do today? I didn't have tefillin to put on. I didn't have mincha ma'ariv today. What's I need to do? No. Well, go to the Torah. What's the mitzvah? Pruvu. It's a really clean thought. It's a really a thought untrammeled with complications, right? So, and according to the Kotzker, that thought is such a pure thought. That's the meaning of Mashiach. I'm going to start again from basics. In Ishbitz, they didn't accept that, because it doesn't explain in any way at all the subsequent events. What's the subsequent events? That these children that Yehuda gave birth to, they died. The whole story that happens afterwards with Tamar, who's the bride of Er, and they get married, and then Er dies, and then Oinon does the levirate marriage, and he dies, and then the Shelah. None of this is explained by the thesis of Kotzk. And Ishbitz says like this. Yehuda was so broken that he thinks to himself, there's no way I can fix. I'm a vergangene. I'm not connected. It's clear that I'm not connected in any way to the side of holiness. I'm not. If there was anything good that could come from this story, then there would be something in me that could be redeemable. But I'm not redeemable. If I look and I see how my father is and what I've done, and what I've done to the family, and what I've done maybe to the whole world. Yehuda thought of himself like Terach. You know, it says, "Vayimona merishoim oiram." The Zohar Kodesh says, "And God withholds from the wicked their own light." Zu Terach. Terach, we were learning, is not connected in any way to Avraham. When we talk about how the light comes down to us and the Behishtalshelus, you know, we talk about how from Noach to Shem and Eva, Terach is not in the picture. Even though Terach gave birth to Avraham, he didn't really give birth to Avraham. There was nothing of Terach in Avraham. And Yehuda thought that he thought of himself that way. He thought of himself as a Terach. You know, that he had such a yish, he had such a nefila, a falling. You know, it's if we would try to fathom how Yehuda thought of himself, it's just, you'd have to cry. He couldn't, in his mind, imagine any way in which what he'd done could, because once he kills somebody, I mean, how are you going to fix that? Once you kill somebody who's a Merkava, and you know, you kill somebody who's the Merkava for Midas Yisod in the world, you know, represents the divine attribute, and you kill that person before they're able to develop and evolve into the person they could be and take the place in the universe that they were supposed to have. The way Yehuda realizes that Yosef was going to be, because as soon as Yosef was gone, he looked around and, you know, it was clear that the light had disappeared from their lives. And there was all this murk. It was just muddy. There was no clarity, because Yosef was the one who could shine on every story, on every master, on every act. He could shine the light. It was gone. All they had was this, all of them. They were walking around in the dark. Nobody knows what's really going on. Once Yosef was gone, they were all of them in the dark. Of course, we can say, we know that they have to be in the dark, because otherwise the narrative can't go on, because Yosef sees too clearly. All they knew, all Yehuda knows, is that, and he thinks to himself, so what am I supposed to do? There's really nothing to do. He can't fix the past. That's what Yehuda has realized. You can't bring somebody back from the dead. Life goes on. That's all. That's all. Life goes on. What can I do? What am I supposed to do? Why am I here in the world? I'm not here in the world for me. That's for sure. That's what Yehuda says. Nothing that I've done or can do can make a difference. Can't make the world for better, because I've ruined the world. So, I guess, if I have a purpose in the world, I am supposed to get married and have children. Why else is a human being in the world if not to do that? I mean, we're just instruments of the gene, the DNA, right? Which wants to replicate itself. So, you know, all right, that's my purpose. I'm a birthing machine, ich weiß was, you know. And God shows him that if that were really true, you know, the Neustadtius says, or is it the Bessiakov says, that he calls his first son Er, which is Ariri. I mean, you know, Avram Avinu, when he was barren, he referred to himself, Anoichi Hoylich Ariri, I'm just like, I'm barren. So he calls his son Er. And then the next son he calls Oinon, which is, you know, when somebody dies and before the burial happens, and the family are called Oinon. You know, they're in that grayness. I mean, that's where Yehuda is. And God shows him that if it's really true that you cut off and that there's no fixing, then you can't give birth. If you're dead, you're dead, because the world of Terach is gone. That's not how things are. And Yehuda has a revelation. And he realizes that he's made a mistake. And he gives birth to a third son that he calls Shelah, which the Ishbitzer says represents ta'ut, mistake. And the Bessiakov says, because the targum of Shigaga is Shelusa. So Yehuda realizes that on top of everything else that he's done, and all the mistakes that he's made, and the ruination, and the destruction that he's left behind, he's also been mistaken. And that if really he were cut off, then he wouldn't be alive, because only the living can give birth to the living. But Yehuda's sense of having broken and ruined and made a mess, and that in spite of that, a person's not allowed to just die. You have to keep going. That, says the Ishbitzer, that's the Oirei Shel Mashiach. The Gotzker reads it, I have to get back to Mamish basics and stop intellectualizing and stop aggrandizing and just, I'm Bar Mitzvah today, I'm faced with what do I do? What's the next mitzvah? Right? That's the light of Mashiach. But the Ishbitzer says, that's not the light of Mashiach. The light of Mashiach comes out of such a despair that we can only imagine that this a person have finds you wake up one day to say, what have I done? And it's clear to you that it can't be fixed and it's ruined, and just there are no words to describe the wreckage, that a person looks out and mamish, there's a yish, there's a complete despair of what can be done, and yet inside there's a knowledge that I'm connected to God. What does it mean I'm connected to God? I can't even put into words, because the knowledge of how badly I've ruined everything kind of interferes with, well, if I've ruined it so much, then what is my connection to God? And yet Yehuda realizes on some level that he's not dead, that he's still in Chaim. And if he's still in Chaim, if he's still got life inside him, that means he can give birth to somebody who can live. If he can give birth to somebody who can live, then it means that he himself can somehow be fixed, not through anything that he himself can do, but through the source of all life, which is Ribbono Shel Olam. If I'm connected to God and I still have life in me that I can give birth to another child who's alive, then it means that I myself still have life in me. Even though if I were look with an electron microscope, I couldn't find that connection because I feel so bad about how I've ruined everything. And the Ishbitzer says, that's the Oiroi Shel Mashiach, that I can find in myself, even though my mamish believe with a full heart that I've ruined everything, and that that I'm a balavera like Yehuda, who's ruined the Merkava of the 12 and the perfection of the world, and I've ruined everything, and yet I can know in my deepest that it's a mistake to think I'm cut off from God. That's the Emes, the Oiroi Shel Mashiach. It's a big difference, huh? And how they read the Rebbe Rabbinim. I bless you and me that we should be able to feel that connected.